Okay, Nisley Cartwright versus Joanne Barnhart. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of Nisley Cartwright. In this Social Security disability claim, the administrative law judge found Ms. Cartwright disabled as of January 22, 2004, due to multiple impairments. But the ALJ found that the plaintiff was not disabled for the period from April 15, 2002 through January 21, 2004. In making this finding, the ALJ found that Ms. Cartwright had no manipulative limitations prior to January 22, 2004, but that it was those manipulative limitations as of that date that allowed her to find the plaintiff disabled. That finding by the ALJ, that there were no manipulative limitations prior to January 22, 2004, is not supported by substantial evidence of record and is not a logical finding given the evidence of record. As of January 22nd of 04, the ALJ found that Ms. Cartwright could only occasionally use her hands for fine and gross manipulations, meaning that for up to one-third of the workday, she could use her hands, but no more than that. Yet, the day prior to that, the week prior to that, the month prior to that, and going back to 2002, the ALJ found no limitations in using her hands. And that finding is just not supported in this record.
Well, what was the time that before January 22nd, 04, that she was examined and had some official determination?
Well, in January...
She was examined that day, wasn't she?
Was examined that day, yeah. Yeah.
So backing up, what would be the next time back that somebody would have had a look at her hand and made some determination?
That was January of 2003.
A year earlier,
yes. And then in 2002, the middle of 2002, there were a couple of different examinations, and then in early 2002.
And you're going back to those two earlier, whichever date it is, that's when this was sufficiently discovered?
That's correct. Well, in January of 2002, the EMG nerve conduction studies established that Ms. Cartwright suffered from moderately severe carpal tunnel syndrome in both wrists or both hands. There's no contrary evidence on this record, and the ALJ doesn't provide any basis for finding that moderately severe carpal tunnel syndrome would not cause any limitations in the use of the hands.
Well, she, 2 weeks later, went to work, didn't she, for a period of several months for H&R Block, which required her to use her hands for typing and so forth?
She did. I have two comments about that. One was that the ALJ didn't rely on that fact in reaching her decision. But secondly, that job didn't require use of the hands as frequently as the jobs that the ALJ relied on, that the vocational expert said this claimant could perform. The vocational expert didn't find that, given the limitations found by the ALJ, that the claimant could perform the job at H&R Block, but found that she could perform the two jobs that she did for Lucent. And those jobs required Ms. Cartwright to use her hands for 7 hours a day. So the fact that she was able to do a job for a short period of time using her hands for only a few hours a day as opposed to 7 hours a day doesn't support the ALJ's finding. I think most particularly the fact that there's no evidence in this record that on January 22nd Ms. Cartwright suffered any accident or injury or that she suffered any type of acute medical condition such as a stroke which would account for her having problems, significant limitations on one day, and no problems the day before.
Well, that's a hard, I mean, at some point, it goes over the edge, and it's a little bit variable. That happens to be the time when there's a definite problem and it's just determined, so it's a date certain. Backing up before that, it's perhaps less certain.
Well, but it may be less certain, but that's the ALJ's obligation. It's not logical to find that the claimant could use her hands for only 33% of the time on one day when what she has are progressive conditions, but the day before could use her hands 100% of the time.
Would it have made sense then to back up sometime in between when she was actually examined, just to come up with an arbitrary date saying what probably would have happened around then?
Based on all the evidence in the record, the ALJ could have possibly come up with some other date. I think the other important fact is that the state agency doctors, on whose opinions the ALJ relied, actually found that Ms. Cartwright was limited throughout the relevant time period to only frequently using her hands. But the ALJ, for some reason, adopted those doctors' opinions, but rejected or didn't adopt their opinions on the limitation to the use of her hands without providing any explanation for that fact. And again, given Ms. Cartwright's past work and the fact that the only evidence of record is that she had to use her hands for 7 hours a day, there's no evidence that with a limitation to frequently using her hands for fine and gross manipulation that she could have, in fact, performed those jobs. The only evidence from the vocational expert, the ALJ asked her a kind of a general question, which was, if Ms. Cartwright has limited use of her hands, could she perform her past work given the other limitations and impairments? And the vocational expert said no, she could not perform her past work. So given that the evidence, I believe, clearly shows, because there's only opinions from two doctors, the state agency doctors, that there are limitations, that according to the vocational expert, Ms. Cartwright could not have performed her past work. There's also an issue in the case concerning the ALJ's credibility finding. And it's actually difficult in plaintiff's opinion in reading the ALJ's decision to determine whether she actually made a credibility determination. I mean, she did specifically find that the medical evidence doesn't support the plaintiff's testimony that she had to elevate her leg to relieve swelling, or that she had these hand manipulations prior to January 22nd of 04. But according to the Social Security ruling 96-7P, the fact that medical evidence doesn't fully support a limitation is really the starting point for a credibility determination. A claimant's credibility cannot be rejected by an ALJ merely because it's not fully supported by the objective evidence. The ALJ, in this case, actually found Ms. Cartwright generally credible. Or at least she found that the medical evidence generally supported her condition. One of the important factors plaintiff believes is that Ms. Cartwright was on 14 different medications at the time of the hearing, and she testified that she suffered from significant side effects, particularly severe drowsiness in the morning such that she couldn't function. The ALJ does not mention that testimony. And perhaps if the ALJ had generally found Ms. Cartwright not credible and given a reasonable basis for that, he wouldn't have to mention the side effects of the medications. But having found that the medical evidence generally supports Ms. Cartwright in this case, she then should have been required to make a specific credibility finding as to why she was rejecting the plaintiff's testimony on the side effects of her medication. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Mates?
May it please the court. We would contend that substantial evidence supports the ALJ in this case. The ALJ made a reasonable determination that as of January 22nd, 04, this claimant was limited to using her hands no more than occasionally, and that meant that she was going to be disabled. Looking at the evidence around that time frame, she did complain on January 22nd, 2004, that she had recent hand difficulties. And it was then followed in March with diagnoses from a physician of tenosynovitis and prescribed treatment, including physical therapy. Now, we've made a reference to the January 2002 EMG, and that was during a time that she was engaged in substantial gainful activity as a receptionist for H&R Block. But there was also no treatment prescribed for the condition for the 2 years until
no treatment.
March of 04. No treatment for that condition. What there are three reference that we could find in the record of some hand complaints. They're in June 2002, July 2002, and in March of 01. And there's no complaint from, January of 03, there's no complaint between January of 03 and January of 04 for the hand condition.
No complaint, meaning no doctor's appointment, I guess.
Well, there are doctor's visits. She has an ongoing treatment record with Dr. Davis, who had seen her from 98 through at least October of 03.
On the knee and stuff?
and there aren't indications that it continued.
Her other ailments?
For other ailments, but the doctor also noted other ailments, that she was not treating in her progress notes. So had she complained of hand difficulties, those would have likely been included as well. And the only time that we had reduced grip strength was in June of 2002, at the time that she was in the hospitalization for a knee replacement surgery, and there was a notation that limitation was in part related to the IVs, which were interfering with the examination. What the ALJ had looking at that period between April 16th, 02 and January 22nd, 04 is a record in which no treating or examining source ascribed limitations. The doctor who was treating her for primary impairment at the time, her right knee surgery, in June of 2002, by December of 2002, released her to full activities. And Ms. Cartwright herself acknowledged that she was to use her knee as much as possible, according to her doctor, and refrain from using the cane at transcript 501 and 04. So the evidence with regard to the hand impairment would support a reasonable conclusion on the part of the ALJ that there wasn't limitations in advance of January 22nd, 04. And the state agency reviewing physicians who offered a limitation in November of 02 allowed Ms. Cartwright to engage in at least frequent, which, according to the description of her past relevant work, did require frequent limitations. There's a VE assessment of that past work in the record where the technical associate is essentially described as a user support analyst, and that's at transcript 104 to 05, and that requires frequent manipulation. So that limitation would, in fact, be consistent and allow this claimant to nevertheless perform her past relevant work. And as Your Honor pointed out, this ALJ also allowed her or referred to her past relevant work as a receptionist, which would also be within her abilities.
Frequent work, I assume, is not word processing and other things that is all the time or most of the time. Frequent, I guess, is maybe
frequent would
dialing
be
the telephone.
Frequent would be between occasional and constant. And frequent would, as defined in both the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, which is referenced at those transcript pages, and in agency rulings, would be between one-third and two-thirds of a workday. And so both that citation and the description, and we did have the VE testimony as well at the hearing, supported the ALJ's ultimate conclusion with regard to her past relevant work. Now, there has been testimony or an allegation with regard to her need to elevate her leg, but that also was not prescribed by any physician, and it would stand in contradiction to her physician's own encouragement that she use her knee and that she not rely upon a cane. And the ALJ here, in making her credibility assessment, looked at the evidence of record as a whole, including the statements from the treating physicians, the objective findings, and any kind of prescriptions that they offered, and looked not only at the need to elevate, but at all of the evidence. The side effects, we would submit, had not been developed below, but in any event, again, were not revealed to any physician in the record in their progress notes. And this court has found, and our own regulations would ask the ALJs look to such evidence in reaching a conclusion with regard to credibility. So we submit that substantial evidence supports the decision and would request that you affirm the district court.
Okay. Mr. Schultz. You got a couple minutes.
Commissioner's counsel referred to that vocational associate statement that does exist in the record, but as I pointed out, the ALJ did not even mention it anywhere in her decision and doesn't rely on it. The ALJ did not find that Ms. Cartwright's past work was the equivalent of a user support analyst, and so that description in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, at least according to the ALJ, does not describe Ms. Cartwright's job. I think the key question is, was the ALJ reasonable in finding no limitations, which is what the commissioner states in her brief that the ALJ found, prior to January 22nd? And that finding by the ALJ is directly contrary to the state agency doctor's opinions, that there was a limitation to frequent manipulative limitations. Now, that's in this case, it's kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. This claimant has multiple impairments, and the ALJ found her limited to sedentary work, and even then she required a sit-stand option. So the question is, given all of those limitations, if there's any additional limitations, could this claimant sustain her past work? Because if she's otherwise limited to sedentary work, she must be found disabled under the regulations. And the evidence does not support the ALJ's finding that, Ms. Cartwright could perform her past relevant work given her manipulative limitations. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.